Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us today on Voices for Change 2.0.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us today, you guys. And excuse me, I'm at a loss for words today. So
that's fantastic, honey.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it great for being on a radio show?
Yeah, it's really going to keep the listeners on the edge of their seats.
Riveted, yeah, as you will.
Absolutely.
Like you do.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're happy that you guys tuned in. Thanks for spending an hour with us today on this. Well, if you're in Detroit, it's a dark and dreary Saturday, but, you know, hopefully you're getting some sunshine and some nice weather. And
I'm freezing.
And she's cold, you know, for this last Saturday in August.
That's depressing.
Well, for you.
I am positive that there are people out there like me that don't want summer to end and are not ready for fall and then the inevitable holidays that come up afterwards. It's all just, it just goes downhill from here for me.
I think you're really building it all up in your head more than you need to right now.
Yeah, probably.
You know, it's not even September yet. You know, me, I'm excited. I love fall. It's my favorite.
Everybody loves a good hoodie. Hoodies are
good.
Yeah,
hoodies are awesome.
I get the affection for hoodies.
Yeah, you get the crisp in the air. You know, it's a little sharper when you take a breath in, and just it's refreshing to me. You know, more so, you know, spring is refreshing too because you're through the blast of all that cold weather,
mm-hmm.
and it's a breath of fresh air, so to speak. But there's something about fall, the changing of the leaves, and you know everything that comes with it. So I'm excited.
Well, you know, and like we were talking about last night, watching the preseason football game, that for me sort of solidifies the fact that the fall is coming.
The first
time I watch a football game, and we just found out that we should have kept watching it. We turned it off. Well, it started an hour or so late because for weather delay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 11:30, I was just like, I can't be up any longer to finish watching this game. I got to get some sleep.
Yeah, we're not kids anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yay Lions for winning.
Go Lions.
Go Lions, 33-30.
Woohoo!
One other thing I wanted to mention really quick, too, is Thursday night, Beck and I went to yet another Riff Tracks, which we affectionately talk about on the show from time to time.
For those of you that don't know what Riff Tracks is, it dates back to a little TV show called Mystery Science Theater 3000. It aired on Comedy Network and also on Sci-Fi.
Yep. Comedy Central.
What did I say?
You said Comedy Network.
I didn't mean to say that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it started back in the early 90s. And you may remember seeing, you know, flipping around and seeing a movie and then three little silhouettes at the bottom of the screen making fun of said movie.
Yep.
And that's where these guys got their start was that show. And now they do it live. They do it live usually from Nashville.
Yeah.
And they stand on the stage and riff on the movie that's playing on the screen. And
there's a whole audience. Whoops. I dropped something, folks. there's a whole audience there, and you know it's great. You know it's a lot of fun.
And they simulcast it to theaters all across the U.S. which is amazing.
The thing is the one they did Thursday night. And they're rebroadcasting it tonight. So if you're looking for something to do, go to your local movie theater. They did the movie Crawl. And if you're a child of the 80s, you know what Crawl is. And it's funny because, you know, I watched that movie a lot when I was a kid. And I loved it when I was a kid. And, you know, the nostalgia of being able to watch it, was great. You know, it was an awesome feeling. It's like, oh my God, I'm a kid again. You know, watching Showtime or HBO, wherever they broadcast it and stuff. But I haven't seen this movie in a good 30 years. And watching it the other night, I looked over at Beck. I'm like, wow, this really is not a good movie.
No, I'd never seen it before. And it, you know, it's not the worst movie that they've ever riffed on. I mean, there have been some doozies. But
yeah,
it wasn't good. And it kind of sucked because I was sitting there with a raging headache. So the stuff I really wanted to laugh at, I couldn't.
She couldn't belt it out.
Yeah.
So, but it was good. It was a lot of fun. It was entertaining as heck. Very young Liam Neeson in a supporting role, and a very young Robbie Coltrane in a supporting role.
Whoever he is, I still don't know who he is.
I think he was the guy that looked like Mario.
Yeah, I know. I don't know who he is outside of that film.
Excuse me. Thank you.
You're just a barrel of laughs today.
I'm a mess. I think that's one of the side effects of it becoming fall pretty soon is I think the allergies are starting to kick in for me. I dodged a bullet this summer, not having any allergy problems, but I'll be doggone if they're not starting to hit me now, I think. So,
yeah.
We're stretching a little bit here. We do have a guest today.
That's what we do.
Our guest is...
Seems to be having Skype trouble, which is not surprising because we had Skype trouble today.
Yeah. I think we need to uninstall it and reinstall it on our main computer. So we're using a laptop again today, thank God. Hey, you know what? Our guest is on the line. Yay!
All right, so let's talk a little bit about our guest today. We have... an epic show for you. We could not be more excited to talk to this person.
Yes.
I'm just going to try really hard not to fangirl out on him.
Please do. please don't fangirl on him.
If you're a WWE fan or a fan of Showtime boxing, mm-hmm.
MMA.
It's endless.
His voice is epic and has been heard everywhere. Yeah. If you watched the... Mayweather Conor McGregor fight, you heard him. Mm-hmm. He is incredible on the mic. He's a savant. He is a street poet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And an advocate for mental health.
Yes.
Specifically bipolar disorder, which we all know is very close to my heart. So he is known as the bipolar rock and roller, which is fantastic. I love that.
Yeah.
And he is a voice for the voiceless. So today, please welcome Mauro Ranallo.
Far too kind, everyone. Good morning, and thank you guys for giving me an opportunity to talk about many things. But I also want to thank you guys. I know how difficult it is to try to smash the stigma of mental health and what you have done with your advocacy, with the show, with the book, and just your own relationship. If I were wearing a chapeau this morning, I would take it off to you guys. So thank you very much. And I only heard the tail end. I heard the tail end where someone was saying we need to uninstall and then reinstall something. I wake up every morning going, I wish I could do that to my brain. We know it's a gift and it's a curse, this little thing of ours.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
Indeed. It's such an honor to talk to you, Mauro, and I got goosebumps talking to you. It's awesome. You know, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I know you got a busy schedule, and you know, we're humbled by having you on our show. Thanks.
Yeah, you're very, very welcome. Like I say, the fact we're all under you know, the NAMI umbrella, and I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to make you guys feel even more special or maybe even weirder, but I have no opportunity to do much of these types of interviews anymore. But, you know, Ms. Lombardo, you've been like myself, very tenacious, very dogged. And I thought, you know what, this is the perfect time. And it's funny, you mentioned McGregor and Mayweather. It was a year ago tomorrow that we were in Las Vegas for that sporting spectacle. So it is amazing how time flies.
It is. Yeah. It really is. And that's I can't believe it's been a year already. Wow. Crazy.
It was was it 2015 or 2016 the first time you were on WWE TV?
I was signed by them in I believe 2015. It was 2016, right after the Royal Rumble when SmackDown Live went to the USA Network and became SmackDown Live is when the WWE approached me in becoming the voice of SmackDown as it moved to the USA Network. And you know, you say you get goosebumps talking to me. Well, you can imagine how fortunate and how lucky I was to work with a WWE Hall of Famer, Jerry the King Lawler, in my very first SmackDown live broadcast. And again, you know, to be able to call the 2017 WWE Match of the Year between, AJ Styles and John Cena. And so it's been all a blur. To be honest, I don't even really know when anything began, because I've been doing what I do since I came out of my mother's womb, and it truly is not only a miracle but a blessing, and I am incredibly humbled to have had the journey that I've had professionally. Conversely, I wouldn't trade, you know, the personal journey with my worst enemy, because as you guys know, the pains sometimes outweigh even the highs that, you know, we're already discussing. So it is the bipolar rock and roller, because my entire existence has been one extreme, you know, whether it's high, whether it's low. So professionally for me, it's been therapeutic, regardless of what you are diagnosed with or what society chooses to put a label on.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would be remiss if I didn't get this off my chest really quick, Mauro. I am a fan of wrestling going back to the 80s, the heyday of, you know, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and all those guys, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, when, you know, the Hart Foundation made their first run and stuff. So
may he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
God bless you, Jim. And the thing is going along with that, I've, you know, watched and listened to the greats like Jim Ross and Gorilla Monsoon and even Vince McMahon himself when they were announcing, and listening to the work that you do. I mean, I count you in the same high regard that I count those men. Your talent on the mic is just, it's unbelievable. It's amazing. I'm without words, you know, I really am.
I have to tell you kind of a funny story. See, we're a little sheltered and we didn't know you before you came on SmackDown.
Sure.
I didn't. And I remember you came out and you did all these, you know, pop culture references and stuff like that. And I remember thinking to myself, what did this guy do, reading Us Weekly and then come right out?
That is funny. First of all, thank you very much. Humbled by that. And it's strange, just moments before coming on the show, I'm very interactive with my friends on social media. I was kicking and screaming in 2009 when they told me, especially someone in your chosen profession, you gotta be on Twitter, you gotta be on Facebook, you gotta be all these things. Mm-hmm. Well, I focused on Twitter and now Instagram for the most part, but I just went on and someone was saying something similar to what you said, sir. And while I appreciate it and I have nothing but eternal respect, especially for people like Jim Ross, who is Gordon Solie and Lance Russell. And there have been so many talented play-by-play men in professional wrestling. Joey Styles is another one. I have always, from day one, people say, who are your influences? Who did you pattern yourself against? I mean, we're all human beings. We all share, similar attributes in one way or another. But I always tell people, do not choose or do not try to be the next anyone. Be the best version of yourself. So while I do appreciate that, I do intend on leaving my own lasting impression and legacy, because for me, calling professional wrestling, calling combat sports, or getting to talk, period, is a blessing and is part of my therapy. And you mentioned, you know, me reading Us magazine. Well, if you saw the documentary, Bipolar Rock and Roller, and I am shameless when it comes to plugs, but I want everyone to watch this, because it's not about me. I could have been, you know, wearing a mask in this documentary. It's about just overcoming what people say you weren't supposed to overcome, or how society continues to stigmatize the voiceless, as you put it, and if I can be one of the many, and there are many, thankfully, voice of the voiceless, then I'm doing my job. But for me, it's, you know, being the best is what we always strive for. And I'm never satisfied. I'm a perfectionist. And I believe that certain attributes of my bipolar disorder, as I mentioned, it is both a blessing and a curse. I don't think I would have reached that I have without it. But conversely, I also believe maybe it would have happened sooner. And I know that also shocks people when they see, well, wait a minute, you're doing everything right now. But I barely survived my 20s. So, you know, the message is as many multi-layered. It's John Cena says it best, never give up. And it's really, that's what my story is about. Just never giving up, never giving in. And just, you know, if I can save one life, and by judging by the feedback that the documentaries received, both to my private email and people stopping me in public, that's my legacy. The fact that I got to call all these amazing moments in combat sports, that's incredible, and I will always appreciate the opportunity. But if all they say on my tombstone is mental health advocate, then I've lived a good life.
Absolutely.
Indeed. And I got to tell you, you know, for people out there, you need to see this documentary. It's incredible.
Absolutely.
It's riveting. And you know, the thing with your voice in, you know, commentating and doing the play-by-play, and this is where I was going with my comment before concerning Jim Ross, is you've had your own voice, your own style from an early, early age. I mean, you could, you know, watching clips of you at 16 and 18 and whatnot, working in All-Star Wrestling, it was there then, man. And what blows my mind, you know? That's what's so amazing to me is, you know, this guy's had it the whole time. You know, you really were born with it.
And then there were opportunities, unfortunately, and that's where the story started. And again, thank you, but you know, with the timing of the death of my best friend, which was the trigger, I guess, to my first big breakdown and being diagnosed. But, you know, I'd had Rowdy Roddy Piper, God rest his soul, who was a huge star in the Pacific Northwest when I was growing up. And you know, I started at 16. So, you know, I came after the glory days of that particular territory. And with Vince McMahon starting his expansion of then WWF in 1984. So when I started my career, it was the death knell, as it were, for professional wrestling. But I'll always be grateful to the late Al Tomko for the opportunity that he afforded me in giving me that exposure and getting to meet people like Roddy Piper, who also just watching me do one promo on a studio taping, sat me down and said, you know, man, you've got so much potential. You got to, you got to take lines from movies and look up quotes and make these your own, because I can tell you've got it. So to get an early mark of approval from maybe the greatest promo ever in Rowdy Roddy Piper is something I've always taken with me. But because of my diagnosis and because of my struggles, especially my 20s, I thought all of that was over. And again, I hate to harp on the same thing, but I really, talking about my career and all of my accolades, you know, that's been done to death. I think we came onto the show because of what we all share, and that's why I want to relate it to what we all share. I'm here to tell just everyone that you do, that there is help, that there is hope. You can be very successful. I make a very good living. This year paid off my parents' mortgage, which I never thought I'd be able to do, let alone before the age of 50. And this is not bragging. This is to tell those listening right now that feel like there is no hope, that those four walls are closing in, that your diagnosis or your situation will preclude you from even being gainfully employed. That is not the case. But I'll tell you this, and you guys know this, it's going to take every breath, you know, every fiber you have. And even doing this interview this morning, not going to lie, wake up 7 a.m. and on the West Coast in a state of anxiety, wondering, why do people want to keep talking to me? I've been overexposed. I'm on all of these shows. Maybe, it's time to go away. And then with the release of the doc, I realized I put myself in this position, and I now have to do what's necessary to ensure that it reaches as many people as possible. So it's nice to say, hey, how successful I've been, but the beginning of every morning, I'm a human being that wakes up and goes, whoa, got to do this again. Okay, let's get to it.
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed.
So let's kind of switch gears a little bit here and get to some of the questions that I painstakingly wrote out over the last week. Just for people who may not be familiar with your whole story, can you tell us where your mental health journey begins?
Sure. And again, I'll make it as quick as I can, because I know even though I do talk for a living, I also know how to vamp and ramble, which can lead to many headaches. Just ask all my ex-girlfriends. For me, it started in July of 1989 when, unfortunately, I lost my best friend. We were both 19. He was a brother. He and I shared our love for professional wrestling. And I believe we're doing this conversation because of our mutual love of professional wrestling, where you guys said you first noticed me. So it truly began with just the relationships we all hope to forge with your friends growing up. And Michael John Jansen was family to me, and it was the first time that death really impacted me. But if you go back and even watch those clips from 16 to 19, and yes, I was, I know I stood out for various reasons, but I already could see in hindsight the mania. And I had many, many, many issues with my health growing up, with my stomach being hypersensitive. I was obsessed with death at a very young age. I used to go to school when I started junior high school at 13 and ask everybody I came across how old their parents were, and immediately make that the equation in my mind. Okay, well, you're going to be, if it's a natural lifespan, you're going to be such and such age when your parents perish. And I'm like, what? Why is a kid having these conversations in the first place? So I always knew there was something quote unquote wrong, and I use the word wrong just for the purposes here, because again, as much as we tend to lionize and romanticize and always focus on negative, look at what's happening in our world now, media wise everything with mental health, it's always been negative. It's always either been put under the rug or it's been illustrated in fashions that, lead people to go, whoa, I want no part of that. We're not going to talk about that. I know that there's a history of depression in my mother's family, going back multiple generations. I have a cousin who's a brilliant chef, an amazing restaurateur in Vancouver, Claudio. He owns Dario's La Piazza Ristorante Italiano in Vancouver.
Wow.
And he was diagnosed with bipolar, and yet again, incredibly successful, and yet has struggled. So for me, without knowing it, mental health has been a part of my, or mental illness, I guess, as they call it, has been a part of my life, my entire existence. But the diagnosis came after the death of my friend. I was hospitalized by a girlfriend at the time. Everyone thought I was doing drugs or drinking, or I was a nightclub DJ, and I was trying to self-medicate. I was in a bad way. I remember driving to the club, couldn't wait to see my girlfriend. She was a bartender, thinking of all the things I was, going to say to her poetically and make her just feel good. And the moment I see her, telling her to F off and F this world and F. And even so, there was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't have, I didn't require a wheelchair. I didn't need crutches. I didn't break my arm. There was something going on between my ears, and I was scared. So when they diagnosed me with then what was known as manic depressive disorder, again, my reaction was like everyone else. I'm not effing crazy. F you for even saying that. How dare you? How dare you, doctor, say that about me? Do you know that I was on national television at the age of 16? Do you know that I'm an honor roll student? Do you know, blah, 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 blah. So I fought it, and it began to really take a toll on my family, where my mood swings, and I'm reminded of this through the making of the doc and hearing my brothers recall what they remembered, and even my mother and father, because for the longest time I thought I was living in a bubble and I was nothing more than the black sheep, and I didn't want to live through my 20s. And there was one hospital stay I remember not getting out of bed, you guys. And no word of a lie or hyperbole, as I know hyperbole is the greatest word ever, and I tend to maybe add a little bit of it in my commentary style. But in my life, I was hospitalized multiple times. But I remember this one occasion for 14 days. I did not get out of bed. So, you know, I won't go into the gruesome details, but yes, you had to go to the bathroom. You had to whatever. But I looked like someone who had been just, you know, forgotten by society on my own doing. The doctors, nurses, family, friends, everyone tried to help me. It was my aunt who is, you know, she's at her church every day. God bless her. She's an amazing woman who's had her own share of incredible tragedies, including having to bury a son, my cousin Tony, a couple of years ago, and I apologize, we lost him due to a heart attack. So that's the thing. There's been, and all of us have these stories. But for me, she's showing up at the hospital, and she gave me the sign of the cross on my forehead, and I was all of a sudden the next morning, I'm freshly shaven, I'm showered, I'm hungry, I'm looking so, you know, you talk about coincidence, you talk about whatever you want, but I know for a fact that my aunt's power of prayer, whatever she did there, it helped me in that time. And so whether it is prayer, whether it is meditation, whether it is talk therapy, there is so much that we all can do to help ourselves, including what we're doing right now. So for me, my mental health journey began with the death of my best friend. I was not medicated because I refused to take meds. The side effects of lithium and Wellbutrin and Effexor and whatever, all these medications that were made for everything but the treatment of mood disorders or mental health issues, I said no, thank you, because I know what it did to me when I was taking them. So the 20s for me were a blur, multiple hospitalizations, never tried suicide, thought about it almost every second of every day, to the point that I visualized my funeral, and it was my family's reactions. Of course, when you see the faces of your loved ones, that always stopped me from taking it to that next level, as it were. But for me, the journey has been lifelong, and you know, I'm about to turn 49 in December, and it's with me every day. There are good days, there are bad days, but I've worked my ass off since day one to put myself in a position to where I can help myself as much as possible. And unfortunately, that means, yes, we need money, we need resources, and that's another reason why I'm proud to talk to you guys and to stand on the soapbox and to applaud what we're seeing now in society. And unfortunately, there is always going to be a roadblock. And we're seeing it now with what's happening, you know, in the NBA. And God bless Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan, and the fact that the NBA has instituted and brought in a mental health specialist now. I see it, you know, where in sports entertainment, pro wrestling, with their schedule and the lifestyle that they have to endure, that they could definitely, many of them, use. I think all of us need to talk more about something that is literally silently killing us, and that's what goes on between our ears. So, you know, deal with this on a daily basis. But I learned very young that after fighting it for so many years, I had to, like an alcoholic or a drug addict, say, okay, I'm Mauro Ranallo. I suffer from bipolar disorder. Will you help me? And so I was very fortunate to meet Dr. Strauss, and that's another, you know, I could do a monologue here, guys. Unfortunately, it's not having you guys talk at all, but I want this to be a conversation, because honestly, it covers so many bases. We need more better educated psychiatrists and psychologists. We need more research done on natural remedies like cannabis, which has literally saved my life. and we need to get rid of the opioids. We need to get rid of Big Pharma. They don't give mm-hmm. a damn about your health. They just want to cash the big checks. And when the side effects are worse than how you feel before you take the medication, you know what? A big middle finger to all of those a-holes who are just, as far as I'm concerned, preying on people that desperately need help.
Indeed. Indeed. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that too, because, you know, all the time we're watching TV and you see a commercial come on for new medication. And I don't know about you, Beck, but I always sit there and wait to hear the side effects, because it's like, you know, this will fix your asthma, but your ass is going to fall off, you know?
It's a Saturday Night Live sketch. Literally, with my friends and I used to do this. We used to ramble, go, well, side effects include colds, remedy, blah, 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 death. Oh, well, that's...
Indeed. Indeed. And yeah, I agree with you on the cannabis thing. I think that more needs to be done as a natural alternative. You know, I remember there were medications that you recently listed off just now.
Yeah, I've been on all
that,
of them.
That Beck has been on. And I remember, you know, the side effects that she would have being on some of those, and some of them would make her condition worse.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I hated lithium.
There you go, Rebecca. Lithium, my friends. And again, this is, you know, I guess I'm on television. There is an expected cosmetic look to it. So, you know, I have to make sure I can try to be as in good a shape as I can. And believe me, I have a long way to go at times. But what I'm saying is, regardless of what you look like, to me, when you're taking a medication, am I expected to put on 20 to 30 pounds just because of the side effects, not even knowing what the hell's happening? And that's supposed to help my self-esteem? That's supposed to help my depression? Restless leg syndrome, where I can't sit down for more than 30 seconds? That's supposed to help my depression? That's supposed to make me better mentally? Seriously, go F them. Like, it is criminal. It is absolutely criminal. And when you talk, and when I mention cannabis, and God bless my power, and that's the thing, support network. See, we're touching all these bases rapid fire. I am so blessed to have the best support network ever. And it is so crucial. It is so paramount. You, sir, standing by your wife, amazing. That is what we need. We need just for people to just be there and be present and be mindful. And so for me, with Showtime and WWE, the help that they have given me in spreading my message, and Showtime allowing me to talk about cannabis in the documentary. It's still, again, we talk about stigmas. What a time to be alive. We are seeing the erasure of the stigma of cannabis with the legalization, and knowing what things like CBD, big difference from THC, what CBD, which doesn't give you the psychoactive high, what it's done for kids with seizures, what it's done for people with pain. I know these people. I have a friend who was cured from cancer using CBD.
Wow.
So why are we, and again, it's changing. It's not changing fast enough for my liking, but there is change. But I remember 25 years ago, I was in my early 20s. I had just been diagnosed. It was a bad time for everybody. And I was a DJ living at home. My mom storms into my room one morning in tears, just having, like, losing. Like, I thought, oh, my God, somebody died. What's going on? She pulls out a joint, and she's like, is this your medication? Is this your medication? And she's
wow.
And I'm like, what is the mom? So the other side of this story, my recent trip back home, mom's like, what about this CBD? Do you think that might help my pain? Like, my mom's had the biggest fight of her life. She's had every health issue imaginable. God bless her. She's the toughest fighter I know, and she continues to fight. But now, all of a sudden, open-minded to CBD. So my mother represents to me where we are at society, the incredible, sensationalistic, you know, reefer madness reaction 25 years ago to where now, oh, wow, okay, well, man, you know, and maybe it's because she's at the end of her line, where she's seeing what the medications have done to her, both my parents.
Yeah.
All I see is the side effects that continue to cost them their quality of life. So you're damn right. And for me, and again, I don't say this is for everyone. For me, I do need THC. It's, as weird as it is, I react because maybe of what I am. I'm in the entertainment business. I'm an artist. I'm a commentator. I try to, you know, paint word pictures. I find when under the influence that I am able to focus more, and it's not, you know, again, the stereotype, the stigma, the couch potato with the munchies. Sure, there's the occasional raid of your corner 7-Eleven store, but is that the worst thing that's going to happen with this? Then I'm okay. I'd rather have a week-old hot dog under the lamp in 7-Eleven than take these pills that literally are just making, you know, people money and not doing what really they're supposed to be doing. So there is definitely, for me, cannabis is one of the best things, but talk therapy, meditation, exercise, and trying to eat as clean as possible. This is not easy, people. I get it. Just like and the diabetic needs insulin every day. Just like someone, you know, they need to go and on dialysis. This is serious shit. This is literally, look what we've just experienced recently and continue. It's like almost the best and worst advertising for my documentary has been this incredible spate of high-profile suicides. It shakes me to the core. So it doesn't matter if you're rich. It doesn't matter if you're the world's greatest singer, the world's greatest football player. It doesn't matter. It's a chemical imbalance in your brain. And even then, that's what frustrates me. I've held it with 32 years. Guys, I've been hospitalized, thankfully, just once during my 6 years here in California. And I've, again, I keep saying this only to prove the point that I am a person who makes a good living. So imagine the average citizen. I get to afford the best, quote-unquote, treatment. I was hospitalized in Ventura, California, at what was supposed to be the best best mental health treatment center. I've never been in jail, but I can't see it being any worse. It was incredible what I witnessed. The lack of attention, the lack of any kind of quality care. Now, the story gets better, though, because people often tell me, too, Mauro, it's way too over the top, man. There's no way it's as bad as you say it is, or your life is good. And, like, there's no way, Mauro. Well, guess what? There's a way. I received an email after the airing of my documentary and my press tour where I talked about my hospital stay in Ventura. A nurse there sent me a long email not only validating everything that I had said, but he apologized. And then he said, you know what? Maybe there is karma. That treatment center burnt down in the wildfires of California last year. And as much as it pains me to have people lose their employment, I say, thank God. Thank God. Yeah. Because we need better facilities and better resources. I sound like a politician, man, and I know I am. But my campaign is for the treatment and the removal of the stigma regarding mental illness, because it's frustrating as hell, man.
Yeah. No, I hear you. You know, and we can back up what you're saying as far as the treatment center goes. The last treatment center that Beck was in back in 2013, she went through a similar thing. You know, we sit there and we'll watch a show like Orange is the New Black. I don't know if you ever watched
it
or not, but
love it.
And she'll be watching it and saying, I can relate to what these women have gone through because I went through that at the treatment center I was at.
It's ridiculous that I should be able to find parallels between prison the treatment facility I was at. And I know that some of the story is exaggerated and whatnot, but, you know, there are some things that are real on there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, it was tremendous. And then, you know, you come out of that, and now on top of everything else that you're suffering from, now you have PTSD to boot from being through that.
There you go. That's another beautiful segue, my man. Look what we are doing to our veterans. I find here in California where, again, because of the climate, the homeless population is an epidemic. It's incredible what's going on. And I have, thankfully, again, been given the opportunity to not only try to help these people, but I go down and I just walk the streets and try to engage in conversation or, you know, whatever. Buy a guy a sandwich, give him a couple of bucks if I have it. But what I am finding in my little small sample size, and there's been obviously more research done, we are putting the mentally ill in jail, literally. Or we're not putting, you know what I mean? Like the mentally ill are either are on our streets or in jail cells. They're not in a hospital room where they need to be, a treatment center. And that, thankfully, again, where there's all these shadows, there has to be sunshine. And I am blessed to say that, have you heard of Fountain House?
Have not.
No.
Okay. When you guys get a chance, Clubhouse dash, no, sorry. Darn it. While you're looking up clubhouse.org, but there's many clubhouses, and Fountain House is the one I want to focus on because I went and visited it when I was in New York for the premiere of the documentary. This is now the flip side of what we've discussed. It was like a 5-star resort for the mentally ill. This building is called Fountain House. First of all, you are not able to discern who is a patient and who works there. Who is a volunteer? And the cafeteria, amazing. The library, amazing. The media studio, amazing. The level of cleanliness and professionalism. And I get goosebumps. I get emotional now. The gym, the way the Fountain House treats, and it's privately funded, of course, the way the Fountain House treats the mentally ill, it gives me all the hope I need for the finally. Mentally ill people are being looked at as what they are, fellow human beings. And I don't want to take away from all we do to cure cancer because cancer has ravaged my family or AIDS or any serious illness. But don't you think the surging rate of suicide and the reason for the suicide epidemic, the fact that many of these people, many of the men, many of them otherwise incredibly healthy and have fulfilling lives, if they are killing themselves only because no one is listening or we as a society are making them look weak and we are I mean, that boggles my mind, people, that we are, this is highly treatable. I'm living proof of that, as you are. This is treatable. So why in the hell aren't we taking steps? And just like certain words are no longer allowed in our society, people can say, yeah, we may be too politically correct. And at times, maybe I agree, but I am finding it more and more difficult because of my advocacy and marching to the drum that I am, where I, you know, even the use of the term crazy, or where people say bipolar or schizophrenic, and Hollywood, thankfully, thanks to shows like Orange is the New Black and even Homeland, where the main character is bipolar. There are many shows now where the depiction of mental health is being treated in the way it should be. I loved One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, one of my favorite movies, and yet the more I learn now, the more I'm like, thank God we don't do that anymore. Think about that, the asylum, and all of that. So it all comes down to what we are doing and what I'm going to continue to do for the rest of my life. And what's still sad to me, and I'm an impatient person, is I can tweet out an inane fact about, you know, WrestleMania or a goofy picture or whatever and have all these retweets and likes. But yet, even though my doc has been well received and people know me now as a mental health advocate, when I go and promote this show or promote sobering statistics, the cold hard truth about mental health, it doesn't have the same traction. I can tell that people are still afraid. I can tell that people still truly don't understand. And to empathize, I'm still trying to understand because there is still so much to learn, and it scares the shit out of me what we don't know.
Yeah,
that's excuse me. Yeah, you know, that's the thing that we're running into too, you know, and we've been advocating for things such as, you know, introducing programs in elementary schools, even so kids have a firm grasp. I mean, you know, you think back to junior high and you go through health class and you learn about sex and all this stuff. Well, you know, take some time during that health class and, you know, educate the kids about mental health as well. You know, I think it would cut down on the bullying and all that stuff.
What's the question we hear next to how's the weather? It's how are you? Every day. Hey, how's it going? Hey, man, what's up? Hey, how are you? Nobody. That's the question. That's the most important question. Now, are you ready to hear the answer? And is the person being asked ready to give the real answer? Because honestly, the question we ask most could be saving people's lives if only we really, truly were in the moment and present. And I'm as guilty of it as anyone. And I know what it, I realize how draining all of this can be, but yeah, it has to begin. It has to start. It has to continue, because we're all fighting for something. And if we're not, if the most, like I say, the non, it doesn't make any sense. I get certain people, we can't save everyone. I get that. And honestly, I don't even know at the end of the day whether I can even save myself. I'm just being truthful. But I know when I'm at my lowest point, my gosh, thank God I've got people immediately. I can even go on Twitter, which I've done before. When my mother was hospitalized Christmas of last year, I just said, man, could use some positive vibe. And the pouring of, you know, just that to me is social media being used, you know, the right way. And,
right.
And as anyone who follows me on Twitter knows, I try to keep it positive. I want to keep, I know there's negative, but we're bombarded by it. We need,
yeah,
we need hope. We need to help. We need, otherwise, what is the point, man? Well, you know, like, it just boggles my mind that there are many people that all they have to do is either listen, and that's all, or just be present, like, just do the bare minimum, and they're not unwilling or incapable or unaware that they're able to do that. So you're right. It has to start young, and it has to continue. Look what's happening with the elderly now in these old folks' homes. My uncle's in one of those homes, and thankfully in a good one, but I see mental health issues everywhere, and it's all spawned by loneliness and lack of social interaction. So this mental health covers life, people. If you are alive, you are dealing with mental health issues. So let's start talking more about that.
Exactly. Exactly.
I have, you were talking about the medications and things like that. I have kind of a funny medication story. I watch the movie The Exorcist quite frequently.
She's not right.
Yeah. And it's my favorite horror movie. I can't get, especially come around October, around Halloween, I'll start watching it every day.
Yeah.
But so she gets prescribed Thorazine, right?
Yeah.
And then I was watching Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Myers gets prescribed Thorazine.
Thorazine, yeah.
So the next time I see my doctor, I go in there and I said, hey, you know, what about Thorazine? Is that, you know, is that something that people still give out? She said, sure, let's try it. So I'm walking out of the doctor's office with a big cheesy grin on my face because I just got prescribed the medication that the girl in The Exorcist.
Oh, Michael Myers got. Yeah. Yeah. I gotta say, one thing that I think gets lost in the shuffle is compassion. You know, if people were just more compassionate towards each other, I think, you know, we would see more of the change that we're advocating for. You know, and the thing that I think people are afraid of and that they don't understand with mental illness is that, you know, those that are afflicted, they don't want you to fix them. They just want you to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, amen.
You know what I mean?
Amen. 100%. And then you brought up compassion in a similar vein. The one word for me, and again, it happened in the doctor's office when I'm in adulthood. So the fact that a doctor, and this is the guy who literally saved my life, Peter Sprouse, but he goes, well, do you know what empathy is? And I've heard of it, and I, you know, well-read guy and talk for a living, but I truly didn't know the definition at the time. And when he said, Mauro, you are cursed and gifted with empathy. And I'm like, oh, geez. So when he told me what it was, man, instantly. And you just hit on it too. We don't want – and the other thing about what, you know, you mentioned, Michael Myers and Linda Blair and The Exorcist, but look at the depiction of mental illness. They're monsters. They're the most evil. And that's
exactly
what society, what we've been used to. And so – for me, the fact that he said that about myself, one thing I've noticed about all of us afflicted and is that we're the most compassionate people. Robin Williams said it best. I posted a picture. He goes, the saddest people on earth want everyone else, try to be, make people the happiest, because no, they don't want anyone to feel what they feel. And I think comedians come from many comedians come from a dark place, but you're right. It's compassion and it's empathy. And again, I don't mean for you, like I'm one of those guys that it's just weird. I pick up energies everywhere and people are kind of freaked out about it, because when I approach them or start talking to them, they're like, well, you know, well, how do you know already that about me? Well, unfortunately, I don't know why I know, but I just feel it and I know. And so I'm definitely cursed and gifted with empathy. But if anything, you don't even have to be empathetic, like you say. Show that compassion. And all it is, and what a feeling, man. That's the greatest. I mean, it's so, and again, I know living in the world we live in where people are like, all right, Lifetime movie of the week and cheesy and truck, you know, it's like saccharine and, you know, oh, hey, rainbows and unicorns. No, I know what life is. I know life is an amazing test. I get we are going to have, all of us have our highs and lows. Some of us, unfortunately, for me anyway, and again, I can only speak for myself, never been that safety net. There has never been, I've never been able to learn the coping skills necessary. And it's, and yet, it's a work in progress. I see every day where, even as long, recent as a month ago, where I am today, it's like, wow, awesome. Okay, good. We're making progress. You've moved as far as that snail has in the last hour, but you're moving. And so, for me, that's the thing. I want to share, the more I give of myself and of my charity, of my, you know, altruistic nature, as it were, the more I just hope we can all do that within ourselves, because you don't have to brag about it. It doesn't have to be publicized, but just, man, one person, if we all right now, everyone listening and just one person in their life, they showed that compassion. And you might not even know. That's the other thing. Many of the people who are suffering in silence. They don't have the voice. That's why they end up killing themselves. Oh my God. What if they, and again, I know I'm not trying to overstate anything here, but I've already been told, guys, I've received the emails where people literally have started the email. I just watched your documentary. It saved my life. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's powerful. You know, you don't know what kind of impact, good or bad, that you're going to have on a person during the course of the day. You don't. You know, so if you approach the day trying to be a positive energy in the world and putting that out, you know, even just a smile towards somebody can change their entire day, you know.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, and what, see, but we live in that society. Again, the stereotypes are stereotypes because they're true. I'm Canadian. I'm Italian. Mm-hmm. So I'm an emotionally overly friendly, apologetic dude to begin with. But I will tell you this, my friend. And God bless America, giving me the greatest living, and I've met some of the most amazing people. I love the United States of America. But I got to tell you, I travel every week to different cities, to different demographics, to different economic situations, and I always have a smile. I always try to open the door, and it is starting to worry me how many people are not returning the favor or looking at you with the suspicion and it's sad. It's just sad as a society that we're losing our humanity just a bit. And again, I can only speak for myself, but that's also given me more fuel to continue my path. Like I say, I'm blessed to do my dream job. My work is my therapy. Everyone's like, well, you, no wonder you're doing better. Look at you. You live in Santa Monica, California. You're on TV. You get to travel first class. You get to call these great. Yes, but what about the rest of the day, kid? What about the rest of the hours of the day? You don't know, and that's why people say, oh, courageous and brave, all this. No. I released the doc. I actually wanted it to be much worse. Believe me, I had to be, quote-unquote, safe for myself. There were many moments of me in mania or me in a breakdown that even my own, you know, my best friend, Harris Yusanovich, who directed his first film, by the way. This kid is a wonder kid. And you talk about, see, I wouldn't be here without Harris. Harris is a kid. He's 15 years younger than me. I met him when we started working in Toronto at the Fight Network 2006. And he had been a fan of my work with Pride and Calling Muay Thai. So he was, quote-unquote, as goofy as it sounds, a little starstruck, and immediately we just connected. We became friends. But this guy has seen the worst and the best of me and immediately said, holy shit, this is, you know, there's a lot more to you, dude, than anybody knows. And I'm like, well, but there is to everybody. Now, it all depends on what we're willing to share. And for me, that's get back to that. I don't, if I have to be naked, and I mean in all my ugly, hirsute, hairy glory, if that's what it takes to burn into your eyeball, holy shit, we need to help these mentally ill people because this is ugly. I can't see that. I don't care. I will do it. That's what I'm saying. You know, people are like, oh my God, Moro, I can't believe what you showed. I'm honest. When I watch it, and of course I've had to see it a couple times with family and everything, I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's just me. If anything, I'm glad that I've often said this. I'm glad that God or whatever forces out there has put me on this earth with this condition and given me the platform he has, because that's my job. My job is to try to save people from themselves. If the commentating pays the bills, that's fine. But I'm also working now on a podcast, a series where I'm going to focus on mental health and wanting to just bring, and I know it takes eyeballs. So lucky for me, I have a lot of high profile people in my universe who have recently also been open with their mental health issues. And if it takes your favorite rapper, your favorite singer, your favorite actor, your favorite athlete, I get it. I'm going to use whatever's at my disposal to get the real message out there. And I'm just so proud that, see, you know, I talk about the fear in America where we may be losing a bit of our humanity, and maybe that be globally. But I also know that in this country, we have the greatest people on earth as well. And those, you know, I'm building this army of hope, and I'm not going to surrender until the stigma has been completely removed. And it needs to be done right now, ASAP.
Yeah.
And how great is WWE for, you know, especially Paul, Triple H, for, you know, just, he has empathy, obviously, you know, and compassion for mental health, you know, and you see that in your documentary. It was, I'm a big fan of his, and to see him come on and say what he did and, you know, find you a position that you have absolutely just soared at, you know, I hate to say warms my heart because it's a cheesy cliche, but it was amazing to me. And, you know, I've read some other stuff about him that he's helped, you know, former wrestlers get into hospitals or treatment centers and things like that. And, you know, I can't say enough for WWE as a company. I know that they get a bad rap from time to time, and Triple H does as well. But, you know, I have the highest respect for you and for anybody that goes on the road and does shows week after week. It's got to be exhausting.
Oh, and that, you hit it right on the head. And first of all, I agree completely with Paul Levesque, aka Triple H, aka Hunter. Honestly, and it's been well documented, I had my issues with WWE, the road life being very high on the list in my tenure there. And I realized early, I can't be doing this every week because people, and again, everyone is entitled to their own opinion and their own thoughts, but I was all, you know, I was doing Showtime boxing on the weekend. I was doing MMA and then having to go on the road with WWE every week. I don't care how much of a Superman I think I am. It was taking its toll. It was impacting me in every way. But I also saw what it does. You know, if I'm not, I wasn't the only one is what I'm saying. So with WWE, I wouldn't be there without Hunter or Michael Cole. Again, it was, you said it, Beth. The situation came to the head that it did for a variety of reasons, and I removed myself from the WWE picture, and I thought that part of my life was over, and it hurt. And again, it was just another, if anyone watched the doc or knows my story, they know that I've had many setbacks only to come back even, you know, bigger. I've been very fortunate in that sense. They didn't want to let me go. And so for Hunter to reach out and say, hey, man, we got to, you know, he likes me, first of all, as a human being, and the feeling is mutual, but he does have empathy. He does have compassion, and he realized that there has to be a place in the company for someone who has the passion for the business that I do, and I hope the talent. So for them to then allow me to go to the NXT route where I only have to go to Orlando once a month to film tapings, and then we have five takeover specials a year, and then, you know, to be a part of the documentary and to allow my crew to film, because WWE is its own entity and it protects its product and message, as any big company would want to do. And I think Hunter also realizes, you know, WWE's been always ahead of the curve in many things. You can say whatever you like about Vince McMahon. He's a brilliant mind when it comes to looking at the future and how they started their streaming network, and they take these chances and risks. WrestleMania 1 was a risk.
Yeah.
The global expansion was a risk. The company is now worth, as of today, publicly traded, and last time I checked, over $6 billion. So
wow.
It's an incredible form of entertainment. But I think just like all of us as society, it is also evolving, and Hunter realizes how important mental health is to not only society, but his crew, his family, myself. And for me, and I've heard from many wrestlers, and I'm not going to identify them because they approached me, you know, they didn't go public with it, so I don't have to out them in that sense because they'll do it when they want. But so many big names who say, man, Moral, thank you for the message. It reminded me of me and our struggles. And you're right. And this goes for rock stars, too. Any one of us, anyone who gets up to have to go to do the same mundane job every day, we realize life. I'm not sure, like some people say, man, Moore, you think it's always going to be great? Yeah, okay, you've had struggles, we all have, but you can't be happy every day either. Who says I can't? Who says I can't? I don't believe so. If it means, and there have been days, believe me, especially exercise and meditation. I'm not the most patient person, but I'm saying, Moral, this is going to save your life. Do you want to live? Yes, then do this. Think of what your parents have had to go through. Think of what those think about that homeless person you just passed by. You don't think he would switch places with you in an instant? So do what, otherwise you're a hypocrite, you're a fraud, and you're the worst. So
yeah.
I realize I know what it takes, and even doing this today, it frustrates me, guys, and you can sense it. I don't even know how to articulate it anymore, that something that should be as common as, hey, nice day we're having, can save a life, and yet we're losing people, and it's growing. African-American males, and the hip-hop culture, which, by the way, a middle-aged white guy, love me some hip-hop. I've been a loving radio DJ my whole life, and yeah, that's a surprise to people. And see, again, this is the life we live. We're all being typecast. That world is gone, man. The internet and global relations, we've blown this up, so I'm so happy that I'm hearing rappers rap about mental health. Kanye West, say what you will about his recent behavior. And honestly, at first I was like, wow, what's he doing? And then I think to myself, holy shit, Moro, you've been in situations like that where if taken at face value, that's pretty shitty shit. You know, like that's not good. And I'm not saying we should be absolved. Like, hey, don't think this is a get out of jail free card for me or a crutch. Again, what I'm sure you guys have heard too. Oh, you're lazy, or come on, go get some fresh air. Oh, you think your life is bad? Man, you got 2 feet, 2 legs. I've said it before. At my worst, and I know how strident this is going to sound. At my worst, I would trade places with any other physical ailment. Think about it, interpret it the way you were, and only. There have been people, I had another friend, her husband committed suicide after living with bipolar disorder for 27 years. She stayed by his side. In fact, on a weekend pass, she was making soup for him in the kitchen. It was the winter. She felt a sudden cold gust. She's calling out his name, goes to the bedroom. He's not there. Feels the cold air, follows the path. The door's open downstairs. He is hanging from a tree. She had to cut down her own husband's body. So. But again, this woman remained a rock. My friend Harris, my employers, people have often said, and I said this too, holy shit, Mo, you're very open. I mean, you work for TV, dude. They you know, what if you have a meltdown live on air? They're not going to put you on air. Like, you're not going to be hired anymore, dude. You really put yourself in a corner. why do I keep getting more offers then now? Because I know when my work speaks for itself and it's removed from who you are as a person. And finally, because that's another thing, my friends, employers, you better believe you're going to be giving people mental health days. Because if you allow them to take a day off when they have the flu or they're in the hospital for surgery, then you better believe you're going to give them a mental health day as well. And the more, and the wild thing is, I think we all deserve it. Imagine if there were more of those instituted. I have seen with my own friends who work hard for their money, where that extra day to spend time with the family or go and recharge the batteries or do something selfish. As a species, man, we need to continue to evolve. And these, even the 40-hour work week, and I work way more than that, my friends. I'm obsessed with what I do because I love it. But it's again, it comes down to compassion and just self-awareness, but also human beings being a little kinder to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, indeed. You know, you look at, excuse me, God. You look at Europe and how they handle the workday, you know, and it's very much more relaxed and they still get stuff done. You know, the almighty dollar, at least from my perspective, is not ultimately what most of them are chasing anyway, you know, and they'll take off all this time and they'll celebrate life, and you don't see that here, you know.
No, and I went to Japan 30 times in 3 years for Pride Fighting Championships, and the most amazing culture I've ever experienced. And I invite anyone, I know it's a little expensive now, but to go and see a city like Tokyo with its population that rivals Los Angeles or New York, and maybe the most clean city I've ever been in my life, and yet they start at a very young age with their kids. And the reason I brought up Japan, though, is as many things as I like there, and there are many things I love about Japan, the pressure on the work and stuff, the suicide rate is incredible. And so, again, there's another country has to continue to evolve, and it's like, again, the stoic nature, or, you know, we don't talk about those things, or be a man, or, you know, and that's, you know, I'm so happy. Brian Dawkins at the Hall of Fame in football. This is the alpha males of alpha males, man. Professional football players in America. And he's talking about depression on his biggest stage. Wow, what a time to be alive. Please, let's continue.
Yeah.
Hey, we just wanted to let you know that our producer's given us 20 extra minutes today to chat with you.
Oh.
Because
because I tend to... My answers tend to go about the length of a show, so I apologize, but I'm passionate about this stuff.
No problem.
Apologies necessary. We were, you know, we were anticipating
a good conversation
about
things. And then, I mean, I think it's funny because, you know, Beck mentioned her questions that she wrote out. We've asked one.
Well, we answered that one.
And you answered it. So, but I'm fine with it because I think the conversation that we are having, the topics that we're
it's necessary.
And it's shining light on things that need to be discussed.
Here's an interview tip for you guys. I'll give you some career advice that I learned a long time ago as well. Honestly, and prep is everything. And as you've seen in the doc, and I appreciate the painstaking questions, and I apologize that maybe we're not getting all to them, but I bet a lot of them have already been answered. And what I was going to say is, you know what? The best interviews, you ask one question, listen to the answer, let it go from there. And always listen to the answer of the first, because I've done that in the past too, where it's like, oh, all right, I got that. And it's like the conversation goes where it's supposed to go. And majority of the time, because I know, and this is for young broadcasters, a lot of people when they interview don't listen, and they miss an opportunity to ask a really great question or a follow-up because they have their questions printed out. So just a tip there for you guys. You're doing fine, my friends.
Well, yay, thank you.
Thanks.
Coming
that.
From you, that is definitely a compliment.
That's high praise. So,
during your hospitalizations, we've kind of had a mixed bag with this question for people who have been hospitalized. I know for me personally, I've only had one experience that was positive in my three hospitalizations. Did you find that in any of them that there was a benefit? Did you receive the right treatment in any of your experiences?
See, there's, well, like you say, open up Pandora's box, but you're right, and I don't get a chance to talk about this much, and even in the documentary, we didn't get to go as deep as I would have liked, so I'll give you the answer. It's a strange answer because it's both yes and no. Found my experiences, and again, I've been hospitalized many times, 8, 9, 10, maybe up to 11 times now in my life, anywhere from 3 days up to 3 months being the longest term. Each and every time that I have been hospitalized, and I've heard this from doctors and nurses in every hospital I've been in, it's almost, and it's so weird to say, but they feel I was put there for a reason, because what I have done, and maybe this is how I tell myself, I've had incredible experiences with fellow patients to the point that many of them have said my interactions with them helped them more than the treatment. And for me, I will say this, there are many hardworking people in the field of mental health, and I see their own struggles with the lack of resources, the lack of beds, lack of treatment. So I don't want to criticize the profession in any sense, because God bless those people. We need more. But for me, yeah, I found it to be lacking in terms of what I really needed, and I believe that is why I began to interact with other patients. But the experiences that I've had have been incredible, to the point where I don't know if people, again, will believe them. I will share two quick ones with you, if you don't mind. There was a boy there, and I again, I know his name, but I don't, none of their, I don't even know where he is today. So I was about 23. He was about 18, I believe, and had had bad experiences with drugs, heroin or something, and, just rewired his brain. He was not in a good place, and he was in the hospital with me, and I noticed again, I just noticed these things. I would hope everyone does, but no one's coming to visit him, doesn't get involved with activities, spends a lot of time alone, isolated. I'm like, this is not good. So I start small talk with him, and it took a while, but he came around, and the next thing I know, he's asking me, hey, will I read the Bible with him? And just, he's asking if he can eat lunch with me. I'm like, wow, okay, cool. And then my mom, again, this is my family. My mom would notice the same. So if she brought me dinner, she'd, bring him a hamburger or bring him clean socks. So it's just, again, trying to be good to people. One day out of the blue, get very emotional here. I was near my end of my stay, middle of the night, and I'm awoken, and there's this figure at the end of my bed, and I'm kind of scared. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And it was him. And all he told me was, and he'd never been open, never talked much, whatever. He goes, Moro, you are going to be incredibly blessed for how nice you are to people. And he walked out of the room, and honestly, it was one of the last interactions I ever had with him. And this is back 24, 25 years ago. So, and those were like just the fact that I impacted him, or my family did, or my interaction with him did, to the point where he was able to feel that. And a guy who was that shy, that quiet, who mustered up the energy in the middle of the night to come to my room in my bed and tell me that, I wouldn't trade it for the world. And why it's a mixed blessing is because as much as it filled my heart with joy, it crushed me that he's not experiencing that a lot. Like, I can't be there for all 7 billion people on the earth, as much as I would love to, and maybe with technology, one way I will. And my friends always joke, they go, Moro, it's going to get to the point, you wake up, put the pillow up on the thing, the screen is in front of you, the camera's there, boom, start broadcasting to the entire world, and you're your service. I'm going to start a positive call, damn it. But anyway, the other story was, a gentleman, very successful businessman, ended up attempting suicide. Beautiful family. Again, you're picture perfect, central casting family. I'm talking good-looking wife, good-looking husband, two beautiful daughters. He comes in, he's attempted suicide, high pressure, real estate business. And again, this is back in the early 90s. And this, it's changed so much even then. But one night I hear him sobbing in his bed, and he's uncontrollable. And he's like, I won't make it. He's murmuring to himself. And again, it's none of my business, but I'm right there and I'm thinking, gosh, I got to do something to alleviate his pain. And I'm trying to give him his space, and he's continuing, my family doesn't deserve this, blah, 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 blah. He has a picture of his family beside him on his bed. And I walked over, I didn't say anything. I took the picture and I put it on his lap on the bed of the thing, just so he could see it. I walk away and he explodes in tears. And he runs over and gives me the biggest hug I've ever received. And he's like, thank you, man. And it's like simple, again, just that's sometimes I feel maybe that's why I was put in these places, because even though it shouldn't be me, and I'm hoping I'm just, this is not to brag or make me the human of the year. I'm trying to say, man, we all can do this. If we open our eyes and ears and just take those risks, people could, the worst he could have said is, how fucking dare you? How dare you? You know, mind your business. Mind your business.
Right.
No, people want that. People need to be shown love. People need the worst of it. Like, you know, people say the other stigma, the mentally ill, they're the, you know, they're the ones who are committing all these school shootings and they're a menace to society. We are scared of society. We are the victims. We are the ones that have to wake up every day wondering, is this going to be the day? Are you effing kidding me? So please, people, I mean, it's and again, just being on the beach, I get to live in paradise, you guys. And yet looking and listening to the sounds of mental illness up and down that beach because society thinks these people aren't worth it. It's incredible to me, man. And again, I go back to Fountain House and who knows, I mean, God willing, you know, one day I would love to just have enough income. And yes, that's why it takes in heirs of the world. You want to leave a mark. You want to leave a legacy. Yeah, technology is great. The disruption is awesome. The medical advances are fantastic. Can we start building more fountain houses? Can we start giving the mentally ill an opportunity to at least have half a chance? You know, even if they make $30,000 a year the rest of their life, to give them half a chance. If we are killing, if people are dying only because no one is listening or they feel that there's no one there, that to me is worse than drowning or burning in a, you know, honest to God, I hate, and no offense to that, because that's what it feels like on a daily basis. It's like I'm drowning. So please give them the lifeline. And that's all I can say, guys, is for me, it's not about me. It's about the fact that, man, this is so easy to treat. So easy in that sense. It's difficult because it's the brain. Yes, I get that. When I say easy,
right,
I'm saying just helping people get to where they need to go next. And just being there, man. And I get it. It takes a toll. Even my friends, like, I know we're not easy to be around. And there are days that you're going to want to try, maybe strangle us. But that's why everyone needs their own time. We all, as human beings, I see my friends with young families and the stress they incur. It's we choose whatever path we are on. We have to just try to make it as comfortable as possible for ourselves, and not talking about things just make it, doesn't matter what, doesn't matter about mental illness, anything.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't address your issues, those issues are going to become major, and then we have real problems.
Right, exactly. It can eat you from
inside out.
Thank you. As I choke over here, Mauro, I hate like hell to do this because it's been an absolute joy talking with you, but we unfortunately have to wrap things up.
Sure.
Yeah, our blog talk is gonna shut off.
Yeah.
Oh, there, see, no more talk for you.
Yeah. And we don't want to do that. So.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I appreciate, again, I apologize for the rambling, but that's also who I am. And if the one thing could come away from this conversation, just again, thank you guys for giving me the platform. But I want to tell you listeners, as I'm sure you do, there's crisis lines, there's suicide prevention lines, there's NAMI, NAMI.org, there's Fountain House, there's Clubhouse.org, there's my email, Mauro, M-A-U-R-O at M-A-U-R-O-R-A-N-A-L-L-O.com. Help is out there. Mental illness could be a life sentence for a lot of us, as I've said many times. It doesn't have to be a death sentence. Bless you both, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much, Mauro. We cannot tell you how much we appreciate you being here with us, and we'd love to have you back on, you know, and talk about your next steps in your journey.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again for what you do, and keep talking mental health and keep fighting the good fight.
Absolutely. You do the same, sir. Yeah. We know you will.
Yep. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you around the Twitterverse.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
And here is Sam Harris with War on War.
There's a war on drugs and a war on crime. They say Jesus wants a war to wipe out Darwinism. There's so many wars messing up my mind. And most of all, you got your war of wars on terrorism. You say the American way is what we're fighting for, but I'm sick of the spin you put me in, so I declare a war. Tell me what is just. You tell me who to love and how to live and what to pray to. Then you kill and fight, cause you say you must. Depends on who we like and who we hate and who we pay to. You say the American way is what we're fighting for, but I'm sick of the lies you still deny. So I declare a war on war.
Miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.